Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to 2020 and our first episode of Stunt Treks of the brand new year. I'm your host, Uncle Jim, and with me as usual is the one, the only, the Leslie Hoffman herself. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. We've had very interesting winter so far.
You know, that's a mild way to put it. That's very mild.
Right. That's exactly. It's very mild. There's just a couple inches of snow on the ground, and I don't know, maybe it's in the 20s, but, in December we had that ice storm, that, rain turning into ice, and that was pretty exciting.
Yeah, the weather has been very, very strange. Like you said, we barely have a covering of snow on the ground here in Vermont. It has been bitter cold, but winter hasn't really hit us yet. It's been very mild.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying is that it's really mild right now, which for my little puppy dog going outside, this is a little more tolerable. If it's minus 10... You know, his little paws get frostbitten immediately.
Yeah, you got to be careful when you have animals in weather like this.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been, 2 weeks since our last show? We didn't do one for Christmas or last week for New Year. So it's been a while since we've had a stunt trek. So I'm very glad to be back chatting with you again. I've missed our conversations. Always fun to talk stunt treks with the Leslie Hoffman. So before we get too far, I just want to say when we did our first show of 2020 for Trek Talking, which is obviously the same people here, Ireland jumped right up out of nowhere all the way up to number 4 on our most listener list when we do our numbers at the beginning of the show. So as my way of saying thank you to all the people in Ireland who have tuned in, and basically that's the first change we've had on our top numbers on our list since we started doing this 3 years ago. The list has pretty much stayed the same, but our listeners in Ireland came right through, knocked Spain off the list, and jumped right over Germany. So as my way of saying thank you to all of our listeners in Ireland, and although it is currently 7 o'clock on Sunday night here in the United States, the first listener in Ireland that goes to Trek Talking and Beyond on Facebook, or you could go to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page and shoots us a message and says, hey, I'm listening in Ireland. I will send you absolutely free. I have in my hands right here, I have Lieutenant Arium, Sarah Mitch autographed Star Trek Discovery, it's a full color picture, 8x10, of Sarah Mitch as Arium from Star Trek Discovery Season 1. I will drop that in the mail and send that right off to you. All you have to do is shoot us a message. The first person that messages either the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page or Trek Talking and Beyond, who's listening from Ireland, will win that picture. How does that sound, Leslie?
Oh, I sound, can I write a message?
Absolutely. I just, I love giving back to our fans because fans are wonderful. And I love you guys, each and every one of you guys that listens. And our podcast family, which right now is Thursday night with Trek Talking and Beyond, Sunday night, Stunt Treks with the Leslie Hoffman, Monday nights, the first Mondays of every month where we do Comic Corner, the Star Trek edition, and our periodic show that we do called The War Room, where we talk about Star Trek and gaming and Star Wars and gaming. We do four podcasts a month, plus some oddball ones that we might throw in here and there. And between all of our shows, we picked up brand new listeners in Ireland. Ireland came out of nowhere, all the way to number four on the list. And we broke 20,000 listeners. And that's a huge, huge compliment. So the only way I can say thank you to you guys is to give something to you guys. And I love doing it. So since you guys in Ireland jumped right up on the list, that's what I'm going to do. I have an autographed Sarah Mitch picture, who played Lieutenant Arium in Star Trek Discovery Season 1. I have it right here in my hands. And the first one that messages us, either at Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page or Trek Talking and Beyond Facebook page, first person from Ireland that sends us a message to say, hey, I'm in Ireland listening to you, you get that picture. Really, really easy. And unfortunately, it'll probably take, I don't know, weeks to get there, but that's okay. You'll get it. It'll be in the mail on its way. All you got to do is message us. Thank you very much for listening to us. We really appreciate it, because what good would doing this if it wasn't for the fans, right, Leslie?
Absolutely.
So we're going to be talking to Leslie tonight. We have an interesting show planned for you guys. It's titled Living the Dream, The Call to Hollywood, and we're going to be talking to Leslie about how did Leslie go from a small-town girl in Saranac Lake, New York, to working on Star Trek in California, in Los Angeles, California. What was the call? What made her dream of working there and follow that dream and actually make it come true? If you have any questions for Leslie, or if you just want to call and say hello, our number here is 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. We will be here for another hour, Eastern Standard Time. That would be till 8 o'clock tonight. And you can call and ask Leslie a question or just call and say hello. Either way, we would love to hear from you. 646-668-2433. So before we talk to Leslie, I want to tell you guys a little bit about how I actually met Leslie and how we started on this podcast. I was attending a convention in Albany just about a year ago now, a little over, might have been 2 years ago. I lose track of time. I'm getting old. Was it 2 years ago, Leslie?
Yeah.
Because
after that we met again. Well, now I'm trying to remember which came. Actually, the horror convention came first. And then the Star Trek convention came, or the sci-fi convention. So we've met twice in Albany.
Yeah, so it was 2 years ago. So I went down to Empire State Comic Con in Albany, and we went down to meet Robert Englund, who plays Freddy Krueger in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. And for those of you who don't know, Leslie was in Nightmare on Elm Street as not as Freddy Krueger, but as the hall monitor that was Freddy Krueger. So she got to wear his glove and his sweater. So So she was in that movie. So when we went down to meet Robert, Leslie's table was next to Robert. And so we went to meet Robert, got his autograph, great guy. And I was off doing my thing, passing out cards about the podcast and trying to drum up interest. And my wife, Karen, and my daughter, Jamie, went over and were talking to Leslie for a good 35 or 40 minutes. And so I'm like, where are you guys? And I finally hooked up with them. And then my wife says, you got to meet this woman, Leslie Hoffman. You got to go over and meet her. She's great. And I was like, who? She's Leslie Hoffman. She was in Nightmare on Elm Street and blah, 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 and Star Trek. And I'm like, well, I never. Okay, cool. So I went over and talked to Leslie and said, hey, I didn't know, you know, you lived up in Saranac Lake and blah, 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 blah. And I think the fans on our podcast would love to talk to you. So we had Leslie on our first podcast on Trek Talking. And I think we had you on for the full 2 hours talking about Star Trek on our first podcast. I think.
Actually, that part I don't remember, but very possibly.
Yeah, Eric and Charles, my regular co-hosts, were on, and we had Leslie on, and we were talking about Deep Space Nine and Voyager, and we just had a great time. So we started having Leslie on Trek Talking with us as a co-host, and the guys really loved having Leslie on because she has a lot of behind-the-scenes knowledge that we don't. She's actually worked on the show, which we haven't. And so it was great. We had a lot of fun. And we did that for a little while. And then at some point down the road, and this is, you know, I get, you know, dates and times, you know, mixed up and confused because, like I said, we do so many different podcasts. It's hard to keep them all straight. But at some point in time, we ended up hooking up with Russ Haslidge and Odyssey Radio. And we ended up going on Odyssey Radio as one of their flagship podcast to help them launch their new radio station. And Russ says, well, you know, Leslie's got a lot of knowledge. Maybe Leslie should do her own podcast. And I was like, that's not a bad idea. We can make that happen. So I talked to Leslie about it, and Leslie came up with the name Stunt Trek. And we moved Leslie over from Trek Talking to Stunt Trek. And so every Sunday night, Leslie and I get to hang out and chat for an hour, and we chat about all kinds of great stuff. Oddly enough, a lot of Planet of the Apes, which is strange, but at any rate, so now Leslie and I,
which was just on TCM.
Yeah, I got your message. I was like, this is great. And my buddy Ken joins us when he can make it. And now Leslie and I hang out here on Sunday night and we talk about all kinds of great stuff. And so that's the history of how I ended up meeting Leslie and how we ended up bringing Leslie into our family. But more than that is we want to talk about tonight, now that you know how I hooked up with Leslie, we're going to talk a little bit about how Leslie got hooked up with Hollywood, how Leslie ended up in Hollywood, how she ended up working on Star Trek, how she ended up working on Nightmare on Elm Street, and all the decisions that led Leslie down the path that would lead her all the way to California and then back to Saranac Lake to be on this podcast talking with me for you guys. We're going to go in a full circle. So if you have any questions for Leslie, if you'd like to ask Leslie about Nightmare on Elm Street, or Airplane, or any of the movies or TV shows that she has worked on, including Star Trek Deep Space Nine and doubling V'Elanna Torres on Star Trek Voyager, the number here is 646-668-2433. And right now, we're going to go way back in time, and we're going to talk to Leslie a little bit about when she was growing up, when she was a kid in Saranac Lake. Now, Leslie, before we get going, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about Saranac Lake? I mean, it's a booming metropolis nestled in the mountain, the Green Mountain. Oh, I'm sorry, not the Green Mountains, the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York. Population of what, 30 or 40,000, I think, something like that.
Oh, no, it's a town of 5,000.
Yes, 5,000. Yep, very small town, very quiet. I believe.
Saranac Lake was, its claim to fame was what they called the cure for tuberculosis, is that Dr. Trudeau, who was dying himself from tuberculosis, loved the Adirondack Mountains, came up here to basically die. He was living in New York City, came up here to die, and instead of dying, he got better. Then he went back down to New York City, got sick again, came back up to Saranac Lake, and got better again. The guy goes, maybe cold fresh air helps tuberculosis. So he created a sanatorium, and people started coming, and actually, that's Saranac Lake's claim to fame. Now, 9 miles away from us is Lake Placid, and their claim to fame is the 1932 and the 1980 Winter Olympics. So it's 9 miles apart. One is more considered as a health center, which actually died away once they discovered antibiotics. And that's what happened to Saranac Lake. But like I say, 9 miles away, you have Lake Placid, which is known for winter sports and ski jumping and Whiteface Mountain for the Grand Slalom and all that kind of stuff. So it's amazing what 9 miles can make.
You know, I've never been to Saranac Lake, but I have been to Lake Placid, which is an awesome little town if you've never visited it. It's very, very tiny, though, Lake Placid. I don't know where they put all those people during the Olympics, but it is a tiny little town. And it's really worth going to check out.
Well, Lake Placid only has about 2,000 to 2,500 people year-round, but then it also has the tourists either coming in the summer to, I guess, get away from the city, or coming up for winter to do skiing. That's a good question. Actually, the 1980 Winter Olympics was a huge disaster. They thought 100,000 people were going to show up, and actually about maybe 10,000 people showed up. But that's a story in itself. Maybe that's another show.
Yeah, maybe that'll be another show. So Leslie grew up not too far from Lake Placid. So Leslie, did you grow up watching let's not get to Star Trek yet. Well, that's a little further down the road. But when you were growing up in Saranac Lake, did you watch movies and TV shows of the time and think, I want to go out to Hollywood and be an actor? I want to go out and do that? Or was that just something that happened naturally later in your life?
As far as I can remember, since age 4, I always knew that I wanted to go to Hollywood. I thought to be an actress. I mean, it wasn't until about 12th grade that I discovered that there was this different category called stunts. But, you know, the bottom line is basically I was born knowing that I was going to be in the entertainment industry.
So what got you started in the entertainment industry? Did you, are there playhouses and things of that nature in Saranac Lake that you were involved in? Or was it just a calling that you heard and just had to follow?
Well, actually, I was pigeon-toed, and someone told my mother that I should take ballet lessons, you know, to turn my feet outward as opposed to inward. But I exhibit gymnastic abilities, which the teacher saw immediately. And instead of being part of a, let's say, a ballet class or group, she taught me individually. You know, she just kept working on learning how to do cartwheels and flips and things like that. And actually, for recitals, most of the time, I opened up the show. So, like I say, whether I wanted to do it or not, I was the sole performer at the beginning of these shows.
Wow, that's pretty cool. So you were doing tumbling and backflips and cartwheels and things like that before you decided to get into acting.
Right. Well, and just wrapping up with Saranac, like, yes, we had a summer theater, and boy, I have a picture. I don't know if I was 5, 6 years old. I doubt that I was even 7 of me in the musical Carnival. But I did a couple other summer theater productions. And then in high school, we also did a play. So yeah, I mean, even before I left Saranac Lake, I was already acting.
So when you went out to, well, let's start off with Planet of the Apes, because we you know, anyone that listens to this podcast, we always have to throw in, we always got to figure out a way to get Planet of the Apes into it. It just always happens. So I'm going to get that out of the way right now. So when you were growing up, did you ever watch Planet of the Apes and think, I want to be an ape?
Or was I just monkeying around? I don't know.
That could be, because
I probably saw Planet of the Apes in our movie theater in Saranac Lake, which unfortunately burned down years ago now, but it was still standing in 1968, and I probably saw Planet of the Apes on the big screen.
Now, this does tie into Planet of the Apes. When you finally did go out to California and you finally did get in a movie, coincidentally, it happens to be a movie that I remember seeing at the drive-in theater with my parents that just happened to have Charlton Heston in it from Planet of the Apes. And that was a movie about a terrorist at a football game called 2 Minute Warning. And that was your first gig that you landed in Hollywood when you went out there? Or are my years off?
Well, I did do a couple of non-union. You're not supposed to do non-union if you belong to the union. I did not belong to the union yet. So there were a couple of non-union movies I did, but 2 Minute Warning was the first union movie that I did. And there's a really funny story about that, is that I went to the set and, you know, talked to the coordinator. And he was having a problem at that time, is that he was trying to change stunt people every 3 days because he didn't want to have the same faces running down different hallways. And he was actually running out of stunt people. So he said to me, if you can get into the union, you know, if the production company will hire you and you can get into the union, I'll use you. So I knew this circle that you could not break already. In other words, in order to join the union, you have to have a union job. In order to get a union job, you have to belong to the union. You know, so how do you get into this circle? And I was so naive that I actually called up the producer's office of Two Minute Warning and asked, you know, I said, the stunt coordinator will hire me if you'll write the letter that I can give to Screen Actors Guild to allow me to join. And the secretary goes, sure, you know, what's your name? You know, what's your social? You know, and I'm going, when can I pick it up? And she, I don't know if she said, you know, well, later today or something like that. Anyways, that's how I got into the union. Most people do not get into the union by calling up a production company and say, oh, by the way, could you write me a letter? Sure. Well, it turns out that I met this other stunt woman who I knew years later, and she looks at me and goes, you got into the union on my coattails. And I had no idea what she was talking about. Well, it turns out that she had friends at Universal Studio, and she had this whoever contact at Universal Studio talked to Two Minute Warning, saying this woman's going to call up, you know, needing a letter to join the union. Can you do me the favor and get her into the union? And they said, sure. Well, they mistaked me for her. You know, they were waiting for the call from the woman asking for the letter, and they thought I was the person. I mean, she got into the union as well, but she is right. I mean, there was no way in the world I should have been able to call up a production company and have them say, oh, yeah, we'll write you a letter. We'll get you into the Screen Actors Guild.
That's funny.
Like I say, she was pretty angry about it, but we both got in, so I don't know. I find this story kind of funny because again, that is not how it works. It could take you 10, 20 years to get into the union. I mean, I came out in, I guess 77, and within a year and a half, I got into the union, and that is actually very rare that happens.
So, when you went out there in 77, what made you, what steered you away from acting and into being a stunt woman, into stunt work? I don't want to. As a stunt worker versus being an actress in a movie?
Well, kind of backing up is that, so like I say, I thought I wanted to be an actress, and I went down to New York City one summer to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, and if you were to look that up and see, like, actors that have graduated from that school, it's a highly rated acting school. I don't know. I personally found it boring. I mean, it was like, okay, say your line, then step to this mark, you know, on the stage, and then say your line, then step over here and say your line. And it's like, it almost made me change my mind. I mean, that's how boring it was. Or at least, I don't know, maybe I had a bad teacher. But then in between that, my brother, my older brother, was at Caltech in Pasadena in California, and my family went out for a visit. And while we were there, we went to Universal Studios, and they had the Western Stunt Show. And, you know, that here are these guys are jumping off the building and shooting guns and high falls and doing fights. And I'm sitting there and I'm just totally fascinated. I mean, this is what I really want to do. And they still got to speak. I mean, you know, it isn't that they were silent. There definitely was dialogue. So that was the combination that I was looking for, was that I wanted to be an actress, but I wanted to be the person rolling on the ground and firing the guns or doing fights or whatever. Anyways, I came back to New York, graduated high school, and I still gave a different acting school a try, Herbert Burkhoff, which, again, if you were to look up that name, again, these are like the two top rated acting schools in New York City. But I feel like I learned how to be an actress, but it just still wasn't enough. So I finally went out to California, and your question was, that combination made me decide that I wanted to be a stuntwoman as opposed to an actress, which actually they both belong to the Screen Actors Guild, but it is two different categories. You register, you know, into a category. So if you were to, well, actually, I don't think you're allowed to do this, but if you were to look up my name or ask the Screen Actors Guild about me, they would tell you that I'm listed in the stunt category as opposed to the actor category.
Now, Leslie, are you allowed to cross categories? Like in Nightmare on Elm Street, I would classify you more as an actor than a stunt person, because other than Nancy running into you, you pretty much were acting in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, it's more for, I think, statistics for the Screen Actors Guild. It's not that the Screen Actors Guild actually covers singers, dancers, puppeteers, stunt people, actresses, extras, or they're called background performers. So you know, when you register into a category, that doesn't mean you can only do that only. I mean, you know, obviously a puppeteer, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say a puppeteer talks, but that isn't necessarily true either. But sometimes when you're doing a puppet, you are also the voice of the puppet. There's definitely crossing overs in categories. I mean, I'm going way back, is that very famous dancer in the movies, like in the 1940s, 1950s, was Sid Charisse. And, I mean, so she danced, but she also was an actress. Or Fred Astaire, he danced, but he obviously was, like, the star of a movie. Gene Kelly, you know, he was a star of a movie. So it's just statistics. It's for the Screen Actors Guild to say, you know, this percentage is actors, this percentage is stunt people. You know, that's all it means when you register into a category.
Now, Leslie, back in the 70s when you were attempting to enter the Screen Actors Guild and then eventually did as a stunt worker, did you find it difficult being a woman in that field back in those early days, or was it, you know, not heard of to have female stunt workers?
It's extremely hard back then being a stunt woman, because there were these groups. Well, you have a stunt coordinator that might belong to one of these all-male groups, and they have this unwritten rule that you have to hire your own first. In fact, one of the groups used to penalize a stunt coordinator if he hired outside his group and, let's say, another member of that group was available. I mean, that's that's how crazy it is. So since they don't allow women in there, I mean, back when I was doing stunts, there was basically no women stunt coordinators.
Wow.
I mean, unfortunately, even today, it is starting to change a little, but even today, it's a male-dominated profession.
So did you have to prove to the guys that you could do the job before they would accept you, or how did that work out?
Yeah, you had to prove. I probably, this wasn't for a movie, but I made my own fire suit and did a full burn, you know, completely on fire. And stuntmen had never seen a stunt woman do a full burn before. And not that this is a category written anywhere, is that there were definitely stunt people or stunt women. Excuse me, if my phone went off and let me try to. Okay, I don't know who did. Anyways, okay, hopefully it's not going to beep anymore. Okay, so again, this is all unwritten, but you had stunt women that I will politely say worked twice for a job, and those women actually got to work a lot because I'm sorry. I mean, you know, it's like if there was a job, a location job, they would be taken out on this job for 2 months, basically just sitting there or doing very little. And then when it came for a high fall or a dangerous stunt, the stuntmen knew which stunt women could actually do high falls or do the dangerous stunt, and we'd be flown out for like one day's work. So it was, and unfortunately, again, it's still pretty much that way. You know, wives get, the husbands take the wives out, and they get a free holiday, free paid holiday. And the stunt women that are capable of doing the stair falls, the high falls, the fire burns, get flown out for one day and get flown back immediately.
So once you got out there and you got into the Screen Actors Guild and you got that first movie under your belt in 2 minute warning, how did your career progress after that? How did you go from 2 minute warning into horror movies such as Nightmare on Elm Street?
It's just meeting other stunt people. There was a stunt and safety committee meeting. at least once a month at the Screen Actors Guild. So not only were you talking about stunts, it was a way to meet other stunt people. Trying to get a job, you used to sneak onto the different studio lots and go up to a stunt coordinator, you know, and say, "Hi, my name is Leslie Hoffman. You know, I'd like to give you a picture and resume of what I've done." And maybe you'd meet other stunt people on the set that were working that day. And that's how you did it. And actually, when I was first doing stunts, there really wasn't the category or the... There really wasn't a stunt coordinator. That was just starting to happen. So, like, one of my early roles was on Emergency, and I was hired by the production coordinator. The movie The Car, I was hired by the production coordinator. But
so when,
but
you,
it, it
when
definitely
you got into Nightmare on Elm Street, and Hotel Hell and the horror end of things, was that just happened to be luck that it worked out that way? Or did somebody from Nightmare on Elm Street, like Wes Craven or somebody, happen to just like your work and want you? Or did you just happen to land there?
Actually... I think in both cases I was called by the stunt coordinator. Definitely Nightmare on Elm Street, Tony Caesar, who was an independent. Now that's the other thing, is that you got stunt coordinators that belong to these all-men stunt groups, but you had stunt coordinators that didn't belong to a group, and you call those guys independents. Tony Caesar was an independent stunt coordinator, and he called me for Nightmare on Elm Street. And then Wes liked me so much that Tony called me back for Deadly Friend and Scream 2.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So, yeah. And also Tony... was like the go-to fire guy. I mean, he did fire burns. He was the Marshmallow Man or whatever his name was in Ghostbusters.
So once you got your foot in the door, it just kept on. It was a snowball effect from then on.
You're always looking for your next job. Just because you got your first job doesn't mean you sit at home and you wait for people to call you up. Every day you have to go out and go to the studios and it's called call sheets. You know, get hold of call sheets. See where they're shooting, whether they're shooting on a soundstage. I mean, that's the other thing. Let's say you sneak on to the Universal lot and you get a hold of all the call sheets. Well, so first you go to the sound stages because you're already there. But some of the call sheets are telling you that they're on location. So you drive to a location, Griffith Park or wherever, Vasquez Rocks. That for original Star Trek, Vasquez Rocks was like its second home a lot of the time.
And for people that don't know what Leslie's talking about, that Star Trek fans affectionately call that Gorn Rock, because that's the episode where Captain Kirk battled the Gorn and threw the rock off of it, and the giant styrofoam rock, into the Gorn. So we Star Trek fans refer to that as Gorn Rock, but it's actually Vasquez Rock, as we say.
Yeah, well, Vasquez Rocks is just a strange formation that exists out in California. It isn't, the rocks are not straight up. They're they're just at a slant. I mean, you know, I can be watching a show, and all of a sudden you see these slanted rocks, and you go, oh, they're at Vasquez Rocks.
Yep.
I mean, I guess if you're really into it, is that, I mean, you can tell when they're shooting at Griffith, you know, you're watching a television show and you're at Griffith Park. We had a couple Star Trek locations there, but that actually is the home of the Batcave, which was also used on Star Trek.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. It's just a cave that actually goes all the way through. As opposed to calling it the cave, it really is a tunnel, because you can actually walk into it and go out the backside. I mean, I remember Tom coming down the hill behind the cave. I can't think of what episode it was, but I remember watching him that day. Another location that is at Griffith Park is, have you ever seen the movie Twins with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito?
Absolutely.
That carousel was at Griffith Park.
Wow. So before we run out of time, because this hour just flies right by so quick when we start talking. Before we run out of time, I want to get to what most of our listeners and most people are going to know you for. And that's, of course, doubling B'Elanna Torres on Star Trek Voyager and working on Deep Space Nine. So how did those opportunities come to be? How did you end up there?
When I went out to California, I discovered a stunt gym of would-be stunt people. In other words, we did not belong to the Screen Actors Guild yet, but we were practicing high falls and fights and whatever. And that's how I met Dennis Matalone, who ended up being the stunt coordinator of Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. And I also met Tom Morga, who's been probably every, I'll say, tall alien. Tom could not make it as a Ferengi unless he was on his knees. But, you know, so we're talking about 78, 79, when I met these guys, and now I got married. I came back to New York. Marriage didn't work out. I went back to California in the early 90s. And so TNG was sort of wrapping up at that point. But once I was back out, Dennis started hiring me for Deep Space Nine and Voyager. So we're talking like 20 plus years later. I mean, that's the sentence of who you know. I mean, we're friends today. I mean, we still talk.
So when you're on, I guess the question I want to ask you, when you're on Deep Space Nine, or not Deep Space Nine, when you're on Star Trek Voyager, and you're doubling B'Elanna Torres, is that a different category as a double than it is stunts or acting? Is that a different category, or is it all the same thing?
Again, for the stunt people, actually it is listed on the call sheet differently. Is you could be utility stunts, which means you might be in front of the camera. You might just be hauling pads around. Then there's ND scripts, which is nondescript, is that so you have a whole gang of, like when the Jemadars were fighting Starfleet in the episode that I was dead, I think I posted that on the page that I was laying down on the job. I mean, there was about 20, 25 of us. So we were nondescript stunt people in that case because we weren't playing certain characters. Then you have where you are playing a character. Well, I have to jump back to like me being the hall monitor. So now you are a character. And then you have a stunt double. So they will put that on a call sheet, you know, like say utility stunt, indie stunt, stunt double. But it's the same base rate pay from the Screen Actors Guild. Now, if you're doing a stunt and you're falling down the stairs, you get a stunt adjustment on top of the base pay. And, well, usually, actually, the stunt coordinator has already negotiated with the production company on how much they're going to pay extra for you falling down the stairs or whatever. Unless you're doing a 300-foot high fall, that's when that person can say, listen, I'm... That's a $10,000 day.
Wow.
But oh yeah. Well, back then it was. I mean, there were two stuntmen trying to break the high fall record, and actually, one of them died trying to break the high fall record. He hit the bag perfectly, but the bag ripped. And his name was A.J. Bakulmas. Then the other one that was the high fall king, Dar Robinson, he didn't die in a high fall. What happened to him was he was driving his, well, it was for a movie. He was driving his motorcycle back up to the start of where they were going to film the stunt. In other words, they had already filmed it. He was bringing his bike back up. He hit loose gravel and went off the edge of the cliff and landed on a tree or a bush or something, and it was horrible. By the time they, you know, this was in the desert, and by the time they had gotten him to a hospital, he had internal injuries. And he died of interest. So both high fall kings are no longer with us.
So, Leslie, before we run out of time, it's unbelievable. Just recently, you were featured in a book, which I believe has already been released, and our listeners can pick it up. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about that book and why you were featured in it and where they can go about finding it if they want to read more about you?
Uh-oh. I'm not sure what you're talking about. Give me a bigger clue.
Well, the Women of Hollywood, the 100 Most Influential Women of Hollywood.
Oh yeah. I got a call. Well, now it's almost a year ago. There were these two women that were compiling the history of women in Hollywood, and somehow they knew that I was the first stunt woman elected to the board of directors of the Screen Actors Guild, and they called me up and they said, is it okay if we, you know, put your name in the book? I said, sure. So
absolutely.
So that's, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know if people are going to read that book even in this year or whatever, but to be remembered, I mean, it's a great honor. So yeah, that book came out, and actually I've been in a bunch of books, several Nightmare on Elm Street books, this Women of Hollywood. There was another book that was on women in the business. There was a book on just various stunt people. So somehow I made my mark. I made my mark in Hollywood.
We were just sitting home watching this video called Never Sleep Again, The Story of Nightmare on Elm Street. And we were just watching it, and all of a sudden, Leslie Hoffman pops up on our TV screen saying her classic line from Nightmare on Elm Street, and which was what, Leslie? You can do it for us.
Well, the one that I actually got to say was, "Where's your pass?" And then Nancy says, "Screw your pass." Robert Englund's voice comes out of my mouth and says, "Hey, Nancy, no running in the hallway."
In that, you actually say that in the Never Sleep Again video as yourself.
Right.
Which, yeah. I looked at Karen and we started laughing because we're like, "Hey, it's Leslie. She's on TV again."
And before we run out of complete time is happy birthday, Jamie.
Oh, that's right. It's my daughter's 25th birthday. Well, not today, but just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, it was a couple days ago.
At New Year's Eve, actually. But I got the tax deduction, and I had to prove it, too, before they would give it to me. We made it under the wire by 6 hours, which was pretty cool. But, yes, thank you very much. And, wow, we're just about done. I can't believe an hour went by. Listen, all you people listening in Ireland, it doesn't have to be right now because I know there's, an 8-hour time difference or 6-hour time difference or something like that. But if you're listening to this podcast, go to the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page or Trek Talking and Beyond on Facebook. Send me a message and say, "Hey, I'm listening in right now in Ireland." And the first person that does that will win a Star Trek Discovery Lieutenant Arium 8x10 photo signed by Sarah Mitch. It's my way of saying thank you to you guys. And what else? Monday. Yeah, wow. Monday, we're going to be doing tomorrow. We'll be doing Comic Corner. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Voyager, Smoke and Mirrors, and Star Trek Year 5, issue number 9. We got a busy, busy, busy month. And of course, Trek Talking will be on Thursday. And then on Monday the 13th, Eric and Charles are going to be at the Star Trek Picard premiere in Hollywood, California. And they're going to be on the red carpet, and we're going to be doing a Facebook Live. So who knows who we're going to have on to talk to. But we've been giving away tickets on our show. So Victoria Fox, Mark Lee, and Shannon Ferver are all going to be there with Charles and Eric. So you guys want to tune in. Uh-oh, she's throwing us off the air. You guys want to tune in on Monday the 13th. And because I don't know what's going to be on the show, who's going to be on the show, who we're going to talk to, what's going to happen. But they will have seen Star Trek Picard, episode 1 and 2, long before we get to see it. So I'm going to be pumping them for some spoilers. And you guys want to be part of that if you're interested in Star Trek Picard. And, of course, that brings us back to Sunday, where Leslie and I will be back with another episode of Stunt Treks. Wow, we're out of time. So I want to say thank you very much to Leslie for hanging out and chatting with us. It's always fun, Leslie.
Oh, always.
And
I love the fan.
It's great. We will be back as soon as we come up with an idea for next week's show. I'll get that posted on the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page. And you guys can head over there, see what's going on with Leslie. Hang out, say hello, check out some photos. And Leslie does have some autographed pictures available there, so you can message her to find out, the details on that. That's the Leslie Hoffman Appreciation Organization Facebook page, and we're down to 20 seconds. Oh, my God. Thank you for listening to each and every one of you guys. You guys are great. Thank you to Leslie for hanging out with me and making this podcast so Oh my God, you put possible. And thanks to all you guys for listening. I hope 2020 is a great year for all of you guys. And we'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.